Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined, as always, by the legend Les Thatcher. A very, very busy weekend, Les. In fact, there is no time to waste with not one, but two big shows this weekend from AEW's All Out on Sunday and WWE, well, I don't want to say undercutting AEW. Actually, yes, I do. With Clash at the Castle on Saturday afternoon. So there's tons of interesting matches, tons of predictions to make. And since AEW, and talking about this 11-match show, much less the three that are scheduled on the pre-show, might take the entire hour, we should start there.
Yes. Why has everybody that comes into this business in recent years decided that a 10-hour show is a good thing?
I don't know, but someone needs to tell them that's not right.
Yeah, someone needs to tell them to cut those into five different shows, right?
Yes.
You know what? I don't care what anybody says. As somebody's been doing this in the ring and as a promoter and everything, 2.5 hours for a show is plenty. And it is. I mean, and like you're saying, and then I know we're going to talk about Tony's press conference a little later, but he mentioned something about. And the, what is it, Ground Zero, or is that what they're calling the pre-show?
A zero hour.
I knew it had something to do with zero. Anyway, he said something to the effect that could be a main show all its own. I thought, Jesus Christ, that's good. Let's do 2 hours on Ground Zero. And then we do four more on the flippy floppy end. But I don't know. You know what? They're holding their numbers up. But guess who else is, too?
Hey, those are on the rise.
Yes, they are. But the funny thing is, as important as the cheerleaders for AEW are, they neglected to say that they did hold over 1 million for the second consecutive time, and it's the first time they've done that in, like, 8 months.
Yeah, beginning of the year.
Yeah. And what they didn't tell you is that two of their categories, where the hell is the, what was Jericho's title? The
Demo God?
The Demo. Where the hell's the Demo God when you need him?
They should have had him make this announcement.
Yes, exactly. How can that be possible? It's called, we're bored, or, okay, we've seen this. And it's, you know what? And I'm not, when I say that, it's not that I'm knocking AEW. It's a common frailty or whatever with most promotions. You know, Tony Khan repeats himself more than anybody I have ever watched, I think. Or it's just becoming standard issue in the business today. Is there's a run-in in every match. There's a brawl. Somebody has to be interfering or it's not good. And at some point somebody says, well, I've seen enough of this, you know? And, which is why, they jumped, on the band, you know, once they went to work, man, they were drawn like crazy and WWE was flouting around, but it's kind of in the other, balls in the other guy's court right now. Because he's doing something different. And guess what? AEW is doing the same stuff they did when they started. Are they not?
They are. I cannot argue that point.
No. Well, you could.
No, there'd be no point.
Then I'd say, Vic, you're watching a different AEW than I am. But yeah, they're, and it happens, man. It, you know, working the chair. I've worked the Carolinas when it was red hot. I've worked Atlanta when it was red hot. I worked this territory right here in Knoxville when it was smoking hot. But at some point, it doesn't stay that way. No business does. If you had a flow chart for a wrestling promotion, like maybe General Electric has for their business or Procter & Gamble or somebody, then you would see there's peaks and valleys. So I don't think it's a reason to panic, but it's the point that they are not the gods of the industry. That's the point, I guess, I'm trying to make. Although there's some that think they are. Anyway, yeah, you're right. We got two big shows, and the 12-hour extravaganza starts us off on Sunday instead of Saturday.
Yes, yeah. So we're going to go there because there are so many matches to get to. We're not even going to talk about the three matches on the pre-show because I just can't. Okay, that's 14 matches. It's too much for me. But we'll take a look at some of these matches. And, of course, along the way, it'll give us an excuse to talk about things you saw, liked, disliked about Dynamite this week so we can kill two birds with one stone here. And we'll start with two guys I don't nearly see enough of on these television shows for AEW, Ricky Starks versus Powerhouse Hobbs. Who are you going with?
You know what? I think they're probably going to put Starks over on, unless, since Hobbs has buddies, right? He's with a faction. He may win in that manner. You know, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this or not. The last 3-day training camp that we did in Charlotte for the Fan Fest, Hobbs was there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I forget who reminded me of it and mentioned that I had some positive things to say about him back then. And I said, well, okay, yeah, I do remember now. I see a future for Starks too. Here's my problem. If you're switching Starks babyface, then he can quit putting his fist on his forehead and looking like he's a Greek statue, because he's not. He can stop doing his heelish things, because that's why he turned me off when he was in NWA. What was that, 3-4 years ago?
I remember.
Four
that.
Or 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you and I talked about it back then. Here's this guy that they're trying to push the babyface, but he's doing heel promos. He comes across as a jackass. An egomaniac, right? And so if he's going to continue that, the fact that Hobbs turned on him, the fact that they're going to battle, yes, he will get the fan side of that, but I don't think it's going to make him a strong babyface. He needs to change a little bit to go along with that.
So you're taking Starks?
I'm going to take Starks.
I'm going to go the other side and take Hobbs. I like the fact that I shouldn't say like, because, you know, whatever with the whole factory thing. But you're right. Hobbs has backup. So we'll start there.
Yep.
You know, now here's an interesting match to me that I think will probably still be really good, but would have been better served on a show with less matches. Stop me if you're going to hear that 17 times on this particular episode. But Christian Cage versus Jungle Boy could have been third from the top on a show with maybe 7 or 8 matches, or could have been one hell of a television main event. And instead, I feel like it's just going to be lost in the sauce here.
I think you're probably right. I do. I think this is one of the learning matches, I think. If this puts in any time at all, Jungle Boy will come away with it, with a better grasp on how to work. And I put work in quotations. Work, not bump, not dive, not table, not chair, work. Because Christian's is a good, strong veteran worker. It's going to change the pace. I don't think you're going to see a lot of dives. I mean, it's AEW, you're going to see at least one. But I think you'll see more wrestling with these guys because of this. And like I say, if they get 15 minutes or whatever, Jungle Boy will learn a little bit, and I think it'll be a pretty solid match. And I think Jungle Boy wins here. Christian may come up with a helper to run in, but then Jungle Boy does have Luchasaurus. So
does he?
Or does he? Right.
I mean, you know, the way they've had him over the course of this program, I'm not sure.
He's like bipolar, isn't he? I mean, Luchasaurus. Right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he's yin and then he's yang. And then he goes back to yin again or something like that. Yeah, I don't know either. And you know what? When I say all these things, you can almost bet your ass there's going to be outside interference in at least 3/4 of these matches.
Unfortunately, you are probably right.
I know it. And it is unfortunate, truthfully, because it doesn't do anything for their creative reputation, that's for sure.
All right, so you've gone with Jungle Boy. I am going to go with Christian Cage.
Damn, you just don't like me this morning. all right. And then we got a tag team titles match.
Yes, Swerve Strickland in Our Glory. Lever. Yeah, versus the Acclaimed. What do you think?
I think I could care less. How's that?
I want to know how the Acclaimed all of a sudden became number one contenders.
I give up because Tony decided they were, I guess.
I guess maybe so.
Maybe they were the only team that wasn't suspended or fined for vulgarity. I don't know.
Double secret but, probation.
Yeah. I tell you the truth. I Keith Lee, I was impressed with him during my time watching him in NXT. I have been less impressed of late because, let's face it, he's a big guy, he's strong, he does a lot of nice things that big guys don't normally do. But I've seen all that. And he needs to grow a little bit, I think, in terms of they're not a bad team. I'm not I can't wait to see this team. And with the Acclaimed, who acclaimed them? It wasn't me. Was it you?
It was not me.
Okay, well then. Okay. But yeah, I Strickland and Lee win. I mean, I can't see it any other way. Can you?
No, I cannot. So I'm going to go with you on that one and say Strickland and Lee. Now watch what happens Sunday.
Yeah, you'll drag us both down the rabbit hole, won't you?
Exactly. Oh my goodness, speaking of down the rabbit hole, the TBS title match with Jade Cargill versus Athena. So, man, if this match gets time and Athena has half a clue, let's see what Jade's got, because she hasn't shown you much lately.
I don't think Jade's got anything she hasn't shown me. I would have, I expected more out of Athena when she signed on here. I did. Because of, what I'd seen in WWE. And I expected her first match with Jade. Okay, Athena's going to pick Jade up and make her look better, but it didn't happen. I hope it does in this match, or you know what? It could be that Cargill is that difficult to work with that and when I say that, there are people that have been put in good positions through the years that weren't good workers, that couldn't elevate somebody else, but yet because of their physical presence, because of their promos, or because sometimes of their, what they might be able to do in the ring, they were still getting a push. But I look at her like that right now. She is not a strong wrestling talent. She's got a great look and could have, if she really gets good and technically good. And so I'm not really looking forward to this match like it's going to steal the show or anything. But hopefully maybe Athena can guide the ship and, take it to a good solid match. I don't know. But I don't think we have to argue about who's going to win here, do we?
I don't think so. This is not the place to break Jade's streak, I don't think.
No, her 4,881 wins?
Well, to their credit, they have not gone all Goldberg on us the way WCW did.
They haven't. Somebody mentions a certain number of wins a week or so ago, I think. But I didn't try to remember it because it wasn't important, to be quite honest.
I think it's 20-something, high 20s, low 30s, something like that.
That could be. She's the champion. She's not ready to be, in my estimation, as a trainer, booker, wrestler myself. But she's the one carrying the torch. So it could be a decent match, but I'm not looking forward to steal the show in any way, shape, or form.
No. What about the interim women's title match? Any hope for that one stealing the show with Toni Storm, Hikaru Shida, Britt Baker, and Jamie Hayter in a four-way now that Thunder Rosa unfortunately has got back issues and was not able to be on the part of this show, and so the interim title now is on the line. We've had that obviously in the men's division, and now we have it happening here in the women's division.
No, I don't see this being a strong match, to be honest with you. No, I don't. For me, I think a lot of people figure this Baker takes the belt, don't you?
I do. I realized that Dave had reported that Storm was scheduled to win here this weekend if it was Storm versus Thunder Rosa. But now that you're in the situation that you're in, if you really are going with the biggest name, someone to put a bit of a higher profile on the division the way it goes, because it has not gotten quite the kind of spotlight since Baker has lost the title, then Baker's the logical person to put it back on. But I do want to say this because I've heard, and I'm obviously bringing that up because Dave's talked about it, but he's not the only person who's brought that to people's attention. you know, to me, that's a little bit of, it's not incorrect, but at the same time, it's not like Tony really was pushing the women's division hard since Thunder Rosa won the title either. I mean, it's not all Rosa.
No, it's not. You're right. Absolutely. I'll tell you the truth. I'm guessing a lot of people figure Baker. I wouldn't put it on Baker here. I go ahead and put it on Storm, and then you can work some sort of, you know, title competition between Storm and Baker for a couple shows anyway. And in that respect, with this being a fabulous four-way, and I'm teasing when I say fabulous, Baker not winning here, but she doesn't have to get pinned, so it can't possibly hurt her in any way, shape, or form. So.
You know what?
I would go with Storm.
You've talked me into it. I'm going to go with Storm, too.
If we lose everything that you and I have bet on together, I would apologize profusely to you next Friday.
What's that old song? Nothing from nothing leaves nothing?
Yeah, there you go.
This casino ladder match. They brought it
back. The cluster you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out why someone's world champion is in this match, as in Claudio Castagnoli, but, you know, whatever. Wheeler Yuta.
Or Yuta. Yuta is a world champion, too.
He's the pure champion in Ring of Honor, yeah. Dante Martin, yeah. Rey Fénix, Rush, Penta, Andrade, and, of course, the Joker, a.k.a. a mystery entrant. Don't know if that's going to be a new face or someone who has not yet been named, obviously, to appear on the show. Could it be Samoa Joe? I have no idea. Who knows? I know he's been away, and there was a story this week about him returning once he finished up his commitments on the project he's currently working on. I don't know if that's a signal that he's actually done and he's going to be here or not. So your guess is as good as mine as far as the mystery entrant is concerned. This is obviously going to be a very athletic and very dangerous contest with the ladder match and some of the names that are in here. I'm not really sure who I would go with because the winner traditionally gets the next shot at the AEW champion. And if I'm looking at this list, no matter whether it's Punk or Moxley, no one is jumping out at me. I mean, I might do Rush only because he's a former Ring of Honor champion. But aside from that, I got nothing.
Well, I'm going to join you with nothing. And unless the mystery entrant happens to be somebody that will blow our socks off. I don't know. And when I see Fénix, Rush, Penta, and Andrade, I know what kind of match this is going to be.
So I guess for lack of a better choice, I'm going to take Rush.
I will go along with you simply because I have, I don't know. I would have probably maybe gone with Claudio. Hell, I'll still go with Claudio. Why not?
All right. Well, who are you going to go with Jericho and Danielson? Lionheart Chris Jericho, I should say, because, you know, he's the last survivor.
Well, now he could be, or he's the demo god. He's also the magician and the wizard.
Yes.
And sundry other peoples. I said to you before we start recording, this match will be paced properly. Well, Jericho's the heel. You figure he's going to lead. So that means the match will be paced a little, probably a little slower. So Chris, his timing is going to be, so he stays right with Brian. It could be a very good match. And then on the other hand, if we're going to have the sports entertainers interfere, and then Blackpool has to interfere, and on and on and on, then it will be a standard AEW match. But these guys could have one hell of a match. I'm just not sure where they're going with it. That's the thing. But I think probably, as much as I don't want to say this, Jericho steals it.
Well, you talking about the two factions just sparked an idea in my head. With Jericho versus Danielson. Unfortunately, as you said, probably a really good match that breaks down in the end with guys from both sides getting involved, chaos, a distraction of some kind, obviously, with the referee seeing all these people going at each other. And that somehow leaves Daniel Garcia with a clear path to either one of those guys, and he has to make a decision. And so with that in mind, I'm going to go with Chris Jericho. I think Garcia stays with him.
All right. I like your stay. Would you like a job as a booker? That had not crossed my mind. But yes, that I like that. I like that finish. I do. I do. I do. I do. Yes. So all right.
We've got a what could be a really fun six-man if they get enough time. FTR and Wardlow versus Jay Lethal and the Motor City Machine Guns, long overdue to be in a company that's, well, you know, I don't want to take a shot at TNA.
They that settles flippy floppers. Well, go ahead, say it.
They were on a, I guess you could say they were in a pretty big company when they were in TNA. At the time, they were drawing more than $1 million a week when the guns were there. So I can't say it was, you know, at the time the Motor City Machine Guns were coming along. It's not like the, you know, it's the impact of today, which is obviously building slash rebuilding. But I'm glad to see them get an opportunity on a bigger stage like this after all these years.
Okay. Can you do the Michigan hand sign?
No, I can't.
Damn it anyway.
I guess.
I was counting on you.
It's probably FTR and Wardlow, right?
That's my, you know, yes, that's who I'm putting over here. First of all, the Machine Guns, are they in to stay? Just for a shot?
I do not know. That's a good question. If they're here to stay, then maybe, you know what? You could make an argument for the Guns if there's maybe an ROH tag team title match in the future.
And, of course, Lethal has two people at ringside, obviously.
Yeah.
This company is getting more giants that go, aren't they? It's just, it's really so boring. I mean, but it is. Every tall guy, we saw Cass return and go, good Cass. Anyway, I think my pick would be FTR and Wardlow. And as I think I said to you too before, required, so if they work a few six-mans, Wardlow's going to get learn some good things from FTR as well. I can't think of, if he's going to do some team matches, they're good guys to work with and to learn from. So, but that's my pick on this one.
Well, Tony threw some names into the random six-man generator and came up with Miro, Darby, and Sting against the House of Black. I mean, I'm not opposed to the team, but obviously it's a little bit different to get there given the way Miro's been presented. There are rumors, allegedly, that Malakai Black is a little disenchanted with his fortunes of late. I can't blame him. I mean, I thought the sky was the limit after the Cody program, and the way things have developed is probably not the way he or I envisioned it. And as I look at this, if we're moving on to Miro versus the House of Black, then I probably have the House of Black win this.
Yeah, I would think so. But I'm like you. I'm rather disenchanted with the way Black has been used as well. And, well, you know, I was high on him when I was doing the week guest coaching at the PC. He was still at the Performance Center at that point in time. And I sat with my mouth open, was it 2 weeks ago, that the Dark Order beat them in a six-man.
Shocked I was.
Yes. I thought, what just happened here? And, wow, yeah. But, yeah, that I think Black, they need to win here. They definitely need to win here if, you know. And I was curious. I know Sting came out in the promo and said, we're friends. Wow, and that happened.
I missed it. Maybe it was on the internet.
It was on one of the promos.
No, I mean when they became friends.
Oh, when they became friends. Well, it's Tony made it up. That's the main thing. He wrote it down.
Speaking of Tony made it up, how about this Trios title match? Now, obviously, one half of the draw we don't know yet because Rampage is live this week. And as we record this on Friday morning, we do not know whether it's going to be the Dark Order or the Best Friends. I think it's, I feel safe in saying it's going to be Dark Order only because, you know, Evil Uno got taken out and Adam Page is stepping in his place on the Dark Order team. Regardless of who wins tonight, they're taking on the Bucks and Kenny Omega, and I cannot imagine a scenario on planet Earth on which the Bucks and Omega don't walk away with these titles.
I cannot imagine either. The Pointer and the Tourist.
Explain the Tourist. I love this.
Well, my friend Jim, because these guys, if you stop and think about it, most weeks they're wearing Hawaiian shirts, maybe gym pants or Levi's or Michael Jordan sneakers, caps, this and that. And I said, when Jim was saying, they look like friggin' tourists. And I said, well, we just need to throw a couple cameras around their neck.
I was just going to say, all they need are black knee-high socks and some cameras.
Yeah, yeah. And they could be tourists. So that's Corny calls Omega the Pointer. And so I'm added to tourists. And Yeah.
Yes, I'm here for it.
But yes, if they don't win, it means they don't own AEW, doesn't it?
Well, you know, we talked about this before they even showed the brackets. I thought this was honestly the logical thing for Omega, especially if he's not really 100% yet and still working his way back, that this was the perfect place. I don't want to say to hide him, but to give him a chance to knock the rust off without asking him to do too much.
Yeah, maybe that's it too. Yeah, it could be. It could be. Which maybe can explain Punk's promo about his foot, which I listened to twice and still don't figure it out. But anyway.
What do you mean? The 100% is what's the 100%?
It's not a hundred, but it is, and it may not be the, but it's the new 100%.
No, I'm gonna be honest with you.
It's got 9,000 screws, 881 bolts, but it's okay.
No, you know what? I got it, but only because I don't have any screws in my ankle or foot. But I completely understood what he meant, so I can explain this. What he's talking about, because I unfortunately had a mishap near the end of last year where I had a crack in my ankle. And it's healed. It's structurally fine. I've been, you know, months ago, it was a long time ago, it was, you know, deemed healed.
Right.
But since that point, Les, I've been unable to run or jog.
Wow.
So I can't say it's not structurally healed. I've seen the x-rays. I know it's 100. It's technically 100%. There's nothing wrong with it per se. But I can't
right.
put the kind of pressure on it that's required to run or even do a light trot. So this 100% is completely different than what it was, you know, last summer.
Wow. And you love doing those goofy obstacle courses.
Spartan races, I know. Yeah, that's out the window, brother.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know what? I know we're going to talk about that TV a little bit here in a while, so we won't even get into that.
No,
now,
no, no. That's even better. Let's do it now, and then we'll predict the match.
All right. I thought Ace Steel was the highlight of that 2 hours. I know other people on this site gave 9,881 stars to the acrobatic exhibition that disguised itself as had some wrestling in it there occasionally on the end of the show. But I thought Ace carried the ball. I hate that he got the F word in and got, I don't know how much it cost him, but
Punk better have paid that fine.
Yes, he had, because he saved it. Ace saved the promo,
yeah.
that segment, because Punk wasn't going to save it. And Philip, when you fake tears, it don't work really well. I mean, it doesn't. Humility doesn't work really well for Punk anyway. So, stop it. No, real quick, Ace Steel is a dear friend. He did train Punk, and he trained Colt. And the three of them wrestled as the Second City Saints on the Indies, and they actually worked for me several times at HWA. And then Ace moved out to Eldon, Missouri, and helped Harley with his school there. And Ace's wife is from there, as a matter of fact. So I worked with him out there. We became friends. He's a good guy. He's a good hand, and probably he works as a producer for AEW, which he was working as a trainer at the Performance Center in WWE. And truthfully, he's probably a better in-ring worker than half the talent signed to AEW at this point.
You know, you just answered my question. I was going to say, I was going to ask you, since obviously you used him and you saw him on the indie scene quite a bit. But he, unlike Colt or Punk, did not end up in any shape, form, or fashion on national television. What kind of wrestler was he?
Well, don't you remember who played Donald Trump on WWE?
Oh, that's right. He did do that.
That was Ace, yeah. And you know what? He's bless his heart, when he went up with them, he bought Harley's gym that was on Main Street in Eldon when Harley got his new school. Him and his wife fixed it up, and you know, they were doing quite a nice business and everything. So when he got the call for WWE and to do the deal, and then they made him into Donald Trump, I said, don't sell that gym in Eldon, because I didn't see a long shelf life for this. And of course it wasn't, but yeah, he's a good guy. He really is. And I'm glad somebody's making, making good use of him, because he's got a good head on his shoulders, and as a trainer and as a coach and a producer, he'll do really well for him. But yeah, I thought he carried Wednesday night.
Briefly, because the less we say about it, the better. Can you remind or inform some of our younger fans the whole Donald Trump thing with Ace Steel?
The whole what?
The Trump thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm trying to remember who, it started with Trump and Lashley. And remember the hair versus hair thing with Trump?
I remember the hair versus hair thing, but wasn't it like the back and forth that was happening in the real world and covered in entertainment magazines? Wasn't it not Trump and Rosie O'Donnell?
Oh, yeah, right. It was. Yes. Yes. I'd forgotten about that. But yeah, that's what it was about. But I don't, you remember the details?
No, just that they did a quote unquote Donald Trump versus Rosie O'Donnell match, I believe, on Raw one week, and that was Ace.
Yeah. But you know what? Ace didn't do a bad impersonation. He really didn't. The reason I'm bringing up the fact they trained Punk is, you know, that wasn't a work. That wasn't part of the show. That's a fact. And that was a strong promo. I'm glad to see him hit it.
All right, so as far as this match is concerned, let me just backtrack. As you said, I thought, I agree with you, it was the highlight of the show. And, you know, we talked about this last week, how I thought, you know, unfortunately, and maybe it had to do with the condition of the foot and maybe the way things timed out, I don't know. But, you know, they got to announcing this main event way too late, the Wednesday before the Sunday. But Steel not only saved the segment, he really saved the build for me. How do you feel about that?
The build?
Yeah, the build to this match that I had been down on because it took so long to get to announcing what the main event of this pay-per-view would be. And so in the end, after watching that segment, I said, you know what? I wish they had done this a couple of weeks ago, but it worked out.
Yeah, it did work out. And, you know, you never know, too. I can't begin to tell you how many times I've sat down in different territories with different bookers and different wrestlers and say, okay, somebody's saying, I got this great idea. We're going to draw money with it and this. And it didn't draw any place near what everyone considered that it would. And then again, you do something that maybe isn't as, you wouldn't consider it as brilliant or as complex. And damn, the people are jumping on it, right? So it's hard to say. I know a lot of people on this, how could they do a 3-minute match? Again, one of the things that I liked about this 3-minute match was that it was so different.
Yeah.
Just like the 60-minute match that they had earlier in the year. And that is what this company, instead of doing a run-in in every match, instead of having 4,000 factions, instead of doing the same thing over and over, need to find ways to do different things. That will draw your people. That will keep the people that you've got on edge because they don't. Hey, we can't miss next week because something might happen that we need to see. And that's, you need more of that. And when I say that's one of the reasons I think WWE has picked up, because now you can't necessarily say, I'm skipping Friday night SmackDown. I know what's going to happen. No, you don't. That 3 minutes, I said to you last week, you know, I would have started a week earlier and I would have had Punk with a foot specialist and, you know, going through how are we going to get him in the ring with Moxley and make it a story of obstacles. And finally, and in this particular case, Moxley's not that obstacle. And to me, it's the human interest part, which Osprey and the Flying Luendas leave at the locker room. For my money, is human interest involvement. Am I making sense when I say that?
You are to me.
Well, thank you. Then that's important. I think this match, who's going to win it? Damn. I don't know. They're not going an hour. But if they had to throw this out, and not because of factions from each side jumping in the ring either. But this is where you should have stopped people fighting into the audience months ago. This is where you should have taken all that other, because that would work with these two guys, is to get this where you, the referee can't get him back in the ring, you can't pull him apart on the floor, and this is where you can have double juice, and we've, you know, and then come back with a legitimate dark match, not tables, chairs, and, you know, motorcycles and all that crap. So I'm lost. I don't know who, you know, I don't know where they're going here, but that's, to me, I would take this into a no contest or a double count out, and somebody will say, they can't, you can't do that anymore. Yo, the hell you can't. You sure can if you do it right. And that's what I would do, and then come back with a rubber match. And then you put your belt back on Punk.
Well, Moxley promised violence the likes of which Punk has never seen. How about instead of a double count out, a double knockout?
Well, could do that too. You could do that too.
I look at this, and there's just so many different ways you could argue either side. I mean, you look at Moxley winning in 3 minutes a couple of weeks ago, not in his hometown, but in his home state. And now he's going into the other guy's backyard in Chicago. If Punk wins, you could see the whole, you know, like Rocky movie sort of thing carrying out on the people's shoulders. He's redeemed himself. He's the local boy made good and the world champion all over again. But if he loses somehow and Moxley wins as clean as possible, and he's failed in front of his hometown and all these people, either he could disappear for 3 months, or maybe it would be this, if he wanted to, it could be the start of him turning heel. So, I, you know, there's tons of options here. And it feels like it's crazy not to say CM Punk in Chicago, which is kind of the reason I'm saying John Moxley.
Yeah, I you know, you got a good point, I think. I think you have a damn good point. And it's, and as far as the double knockout, if you worked some close to the ropes and the double knockout happened where they both fell outside and then got counted out, where neither one of them got back in by the, but you know, see, there is why as a booker and as a promoter, we always tried to establish things that way when something happened, the people understood it. But now your referees, especially in this company, and I've heard other people besides me say this, and other people who are just fans and other people who are also in the wrestling business, is that the referees, well, and it happens sometimes in WWE and as well, but the referee will jump outside instead of counting a person to see if they're all right. And they should have started. And the other thing has been going on for years and years and years, and it's bullshit. Excuse my French, but it's bullshit. Is you and I are fighting on the floor. I jump on the apron, roll inside the ring proper, and roll back out, and that's supposed to stop your count too? How does that work?
It shouldn't.
You have the rest of your life to give me a logical answer, and there isn't one. And if I were running come today, it wouldn't happen. You can roll in all you want, but I'm still counting on the other guy. And with them, especially their female, God, what a referee.
Aubrey.
Yes, Aubrey with all the hand signals and facials. And but they, you know, there's times they'll two guys are on the floor and they'll stop and stand and watch. Nobody's being counted. And you know what? Make them get back in the damn ring. If you don't want to count to set the count. You know, years ago, you could get, I got the count of 10 on the apron, 20 on the floor. Give them the count of 20 on the floor. And if they're not talented enough to get something done in a count of 20, then they're in the wrong damn business to begin with. You don't need to spend half of a 15-minute match on the floor. It just don't. And that's the other thing that goes on every night and every match, too. The ring is just a prop. But, yeah, I could, you know, and I'm babbling on here, but that's my point, where what I just mentioned about counting them both out, if they were to, you know, if a double knockout had them both bumped through the ropes and to the floor. But, you know, you have never established that there is a legitimate count. And somebody's going to say, well, last week, the guy's on the floor, and I could have counted to 100, and you didn't count at all. Consistency. That's how you tell good stories.
Well,
I'm going to throw my hands up in the air and say, I don't know who the hell's going to win this thing, but...
I'm going to take Moxley. We'll leave it up in the air for you, and we'll move our attention to Clash at the Castle. Want to make sure we get these predictions in any conversation that goes along with the build of these matches and whatnot before we wrap this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. But before we get to any of those predictions and the match rundown for Clash at the Castle, which, by the way, is not only on Peacock, but remember, it's on Saturday at 1 p.m. because they are across the pond. First big show in 30-some-odd years where they're having a pay-per-view style event away from America, which is a really big deal. But again, before we get to that, Les, let's talk about how folks can get a hold of you for bookings and training camps and such.
All right, sure. You can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. And I can do one-day seminars or weekend training camps. I prefer the weekend training camp simply because you get more done, the kids get more out of it, and we just accomplish more over the 2 days. But you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to send you out the information, the cost, and what I cover and what we do and everything. I will promise you, you'll get your money's worth, and it's completely hands-on. And if you do the weekend, we're going to do a complete 8-hour of both days at least, and with a break for lunch. And, you know, I enjoy doing these, and I think, you know, they do prove to be beneficial to those that attend. So drop me a line and let's get something done.
All right. So for this big Saturday afternoon show on the East Coast, at least, Clash at the Castle for WWE, an enormous house. And that could factor heavily into decisions you make in the main event. We'll get there in just a little bit.
But they don't have 30 matches. Why?
Well, you know what? This actually, even though it's more matches, it does kind of feel almost NXT-ish in that Triple H, you know, 5 matches, two and a half hours. And, you know, this is compact for a WWE show. Yeah. Let's start with one other thing that, you know, Triple H is not running for office, but he'd get my vote because he's giving people their names back. Matt Riddle and Seth Rollins.
Yeah. Yeah, I love names back. I love everybody. Somebody said that, who was it, didn't want their name back. Oh, Theory.
Oh, really?
Yeah, said he liked just being Theory.
Okay.
The theory is Theory likes being, never mind. I'm trying to be funny. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I prefer people with, well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I prefer tag teams with two, you got two guys, and then that's Bill Jones and Jack Smith. They can together. They make such and such, but just to tell me this is God loves the people's tag team. This is the Jesus tag. That doesn't tell me who they are. So anyway, yeah, I like names. And so where we start on this? You know what? I think Riddle gets steals the win here. I want him to steal the win because I think he's. Seth has handed him his ass enough that I think it's Matt Riddle time.
Agreed. I'm going to go with Matt Riddle as well, especially with the segment that they ended up showing after the original thing, which, by the way, we didn't get a chance to discuss this. Let's do this now real quick because it's not going to be a Raw rundown, obviously. But the parking lot footage, NXT jokes about the parking lot aside, this parking lot footage on Monday night from far away, it was a little different take on the parking lot altercations. So I like that. But the other thing that obviously they showed during the show was Rollins and Riddle after their quote-unquote segment had gone off the air, and Rollins was trash-talking him. I mean, you know, after saying something like that, Riddle has to win, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Because you're looking at Seth has crossed the line. And so, yeah, Matt gets his hand raised, or at least I'm raising his hand. I don't know if Triple H is or not, but I'm raised. And Seth can take that. I mean, it's not going to knock Seth off the path or anything. So yes, I think that's good. You know what we didn't mention?
What's that?
Is Edge, Ray, with Dominic in the corner versus Finn and Priest with Ripley in the corner. I know they're probably going for Dominic's upset because Dad picked Edge. Let me say this. I think so far Triple H has done some really nice things with WWE, and I see improvements. What I won't see is an improvement with father against son. I don't think in this day and age anybody's going to buy it, and I don't think that people, I don't think the writers or whoever will build this long enough, hard enough to really make people believe it. So I wouldn't do it. But in that respect, I'm going to guess that Finn and Damian win because that gives Dominic reason to be more pissed off, doesn't it?
I'm going to go with you on Balor and Priest. I guess we're going to learn a little bit about Triple H this weekend on that, because the rumor was, at least, that Vince was very into the idea of having Dominic turn on Rey. Obviously, now all bets are off, so we'll see if Triple H shares Vince's enthusiasm for that particular angle.
Yeah, I'm going to say this real quick about Raw. First of all, and I know we're running short on time. First of all, I thought the women's finish in a tag match was good, because I've done that finish a few times myself years and years ago. And although it was explained that, well, the little girl made the tag, but she got out on her own. See, here's where we talk about rules and where you need to be some consistency. The way we would have worked that particular, and I thought that's what they were doing, and I thought this is a cool finish because it is an old school. I mentioned to my friend Jim, it's an old school finish. In this situation, she did tag, and then she left the ring, but under her own power, she wasn't thrown out. The referee never counted her out, nor did the referee ever tell Rachel to get out of the ring. And so she's in, she makes the pin, and they get the belts. And the good guys screwed the bad guys. It happens, and that's, we used to use it in that respect back then. But now, from what Dave's saying is, well, wasn't the legal person. Yes, she was, Dave. She was tagged in and never tagged out. Now, we can argue that. You've got my home phone number. Please feel free to call me. We can go for hours if you would like, because I don't give a damn. Yes, it works this way. And how do I know? I've done it. That's how I know. But yeah, I don't get what happened there. I truly don't. But I thought the finish was that. But actually, that was the outstanding, because this was, to me, in Pittsburgh, the fans just weren't really that hot. And I noticed that with the whole Priest and Finn thing when Edge didn't run in with the Mysterios and so forth. And my friend Jim mentioned, fans aren't really into this. And they did get into the women's. I mean, they got into a couple of the other matches, but they got in, of course, Angle, because he was, a local guy. But they got really into the women's match about halfway in, and I thought it did really well. But anyway, I wanted to mention that finish can work just the way it was. If the Observer changes it, by God, it's okay with me.
Well, since we just got finished talking a lot about that women's tag title match, let's get into the six-woman match that's going to be on this show. There's Bianca Belair, Alexa Bliss, and Asuka against Bayley, Io Sky, and Dakota Kai. I can't imagine a scenario under which Bayley's crew doesn't walk away with a win here.
I can't either, and they're either going to have to beat Bliss or Asuka. Belair's not going to drop the fall here, I don't think, unless Bayley were to pin Bianca.
That's it.
And she says, okay, I want a title match. I beat the champion. And then somebody's going to say, but it was in a tag match. That's as old as I am, too. But it will work. It would work. That's happened before. You might, Dory Jr. and Terry Funk were in town, and they're working with two of your top baby faces in a tag match, and Dory's a champion at this point in time. And one of those baby faces pins Dory in the tag match. Oh, my God, the championship wasn't on the line. It was a tag match. And now this baby face has got an ironclad case petition for a title match because I beat him. All right, let's move along. I'm tired of being right.
Well, I think we're both going to be right about this one, the Intercontinental title match between Gunther and Sheamus. It'll be hard-hitting, but I can't imagine a title change.
No, I think Gunther hangs on to this. As I said to you, and I'm not nothing against Sheamus, I just would have liked to have seen a stronger babyface with Gunther. That would have been my call because, we've seen him with some good, strong babyfaces, and he has some tremendous matches. And this, like you say, this will be hard-hitting. Ain't no doubt about that, but I'm just not sure. But Gunther wins this one. I don't have any doubt in my mind about that.
So your take on this SmackDown women's title match, Liv Morgan survived Ronda Rousey. Does she survive Shayna Baszler?
Well, if she, I don't know. I was glad they put it on Liv. I thought the way when she got it, the fans were with her. But the longer she's had it, she's lukewarm with it. And I hate to say that, but it's true. I don't know if they put it on Baszler and then she goes and it ends up back on somebody else. She's the transition champion, maybe. I don't know. This is a hard one to call, because we know Baszler has got little pushes off and on over the last few years, but never really hard. And I don't know if this might be the time that they're figuring maybe to give her a shot with this belt for a while. What do you think?
Well, she came through NXT, so I imagine Paul Levesque is a fan. If Ronda Rousey's not coming back anytime soon, and I know she was on TV just the other day, but, she might be very pleased to see her friend get a run with the title.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So it's hard to say. And the main event, man, you going to call that one?
Well, there are a lot of different directions to go here with Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre, I think. Not unlike the fact that you could do a whole lot with Punk and Moxley in AEW, because obviously Reigns is on the historic title reign. On the other hand, you've also got Drew McIntyre, who never really got the true coronation, because unfortunately when he beat Lesnar at WrestleMania, it was in the Performance Center. The year after that wasn't the right time with Lashley either, not only because you were working on something with Lashley, but that was, 20,000 people, not a traditional WrestleMania-sized crowd. And even though this is not a WrestleMania, it is a Mania-sized crowd with Clash at the Castle. It's in the UK. It's McIntyre's backyard. Much like Punk in Chicago, this could be the conquering hero ending the reign that nobody envisioned coming to an end. But with the story about Tyson Fury being at ringside, and knowing that since Fury appeared for WWE a couple of years ago in one of those Saudi Arabia shows, that he and McIntyre every so often are bickering back and forth about Fury coming in or a potential match or something like that, I'm starting to wonder if Fury somehow gets involved in this and they're going somewhere with McIntyre and Fury. Because if they are, then McIntyre wouldn't need to win the title here, and you wouldn't want the title involved in that match anyway.
Right. But the only reason if I sit here and think, why would I put the belt on Drew? And then I see the visual of a Scotsman winning the belt in Scotland.
Mm.
Right?
I mean, it's a powerful visual. Yeah.
Damn sure is. So you're right. This is like Punk and Moxley. It can go several ways. And just depending on what they're doing past this, you're right about the thing with Fury. Fury could distract McIntyre, and Roman hooks him, rolls him up, boom, 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 1, 2, 3. And then Drew wants a piece of Fury. And again, Fury doesn't even have to lay a hand on him. Just walk up to the apron and start jawing at him. That's another thing I want to mention. Every company that I get to watch, this whole stupid, you jump up on the apron, I turn around and talk to you, and then I turn around and lose the match because the guy. Am I just completely friggin' stupid? It happens so often that it doesn't mean anything anymore. It truly doesn't. And I just wanted to throw that in. But, yeah. So, yes, this match could go numerous ways. But like I say, I see the visual of Drew putting that belt around his waist in Scotland. My God.
Then there's one other component that I had forgotten about, but just remembered while you were talking here, is that, and these are stories going around, obviously. It's, who knows, right? Whatever gets reported gets reported. I'm sure they have their sources and believe it, but you never really know. The rumor had it that, I don't remember if it was USA or Fox, but one of them, if not both, allegedly had made some noises to WWE about wanting a champion who was going to be on TV a little more regularly than Roman's schedule allows him to be these days. He's got that in and out sort of deal that he's earned over the years he's put in, but that one or both of the networks were hoping that they'd see the champion on their television show a little more regularly. And if that's the case, then Drew's the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That would make business sense. It may not make real good sense wrestling wise.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're trying to appease and suck up to the networks, then yeah, that would be the way to go.
And to your point, and about
speaking
this,
of that, this Discovery has asked AEW to tone their vulgarity down, haven't they?
Well, I guess that's why Ace got fined, right?
Yeah, as far as I can tell. And I don't see a, you know, it, they were, you know, I'm waiting for somebody to ask him to bring the blood down a little bit. But, of course, we didn't see any this week.
Well, that could have been part of it, too.
Yeah, could be. Could very well be.
Let's see if Tony books.
Wow, we filled this whole time and talking about two shows.
I know. I was just going to say, imagine Tony gets mad about that and books the way Dusty did when they told him no blood. And gets Punk gets a spike in the eye.
Right.
But yeah, you know what? You're right. We did spend this whole thing just talking about two pay-per-views, but it did allow us to get in and out of some of the TV this week. So, you know, mission was essentially accomplished. There are going to be two, I think, really good shows. I just don't know if I have the endurance for an AEW pay-per-view at this point.
Right. I got you. And again, before we get out of here, you know, for those listening, if you're new, ask us questions, man. We want to make you feel at home here. We want you to be a part of what we do every week. And, the more you share with us, I mean, we're playing off the top of our head here, but we can do history, we can do current, we can do, or just answer some questions if you'd like. So, but anyway, drop us a line and let us know.
That's right. He is at Les Thatcher on Twitter, which is actually the best place to send those questions right now. In addition to, of course, if you're already a subscriber to F4W Online, you can also jump into our thread on the board and ask any question you like. Before we get out of here, though, I want to have you answer the question of where can folks get T-shirts and DVDs from you?
Well, if you'd like to get some T-shirts, you can go to Pro Wrestling Tees, because they carry the first ever Pro Wrestling T-shirt on the market, the Briscoe Booster T-shirt, which was my brainchild, and along with Jack and Jerry, we put that on the market in 1972, artwork by Jerry the King Lawler, and you can get that, as I mentioned, at Pro Wrestling Tees. If you happen to be a Les Thatcher fan, you can also get I'm a Les Thatcher guy there as well. And Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content. Both those sets are two DVDs, matches, interviews, and extras. Joe Dombrowski and myself do the voiceover. Joe does most of the play-by-play, and I cover the historical things and behind the scenes. And you can get those joe-dombrowski.com or at prowrestlinglibrary.com. Also, the Brian Pillman Show Anthology, 20-year anniversary, 4-DVD set, or 15 hours of content. All four of those great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001. Matches, interviews, auction footage, awards, and extras. Like I say, 15 hours of content. You can get that. PillmanShows.com or at the two addresses I mentioned, joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And if you're on that PillmanShows.com, if you click on About, you'll find several sections that Joe is building with my back magazines, wrestling pictures, and some of the historical stuff. And it's a lot to be done yet, but that's on there as well. And we want to wish everyone a great, safe, an enjoyable Labor Day weekend and a solid holiday.
All right, so back in the day of the territories, who was known for commandeering the grill during rare holidays where you might have had the afternoon to yourself before a show?
I don't remember anybody commandeering.
Nobody said come by
Labor
the house.
Day, we work, damn it.
So nobody said come by the house, we'll have burgers and we'll jump in the car?
I don't remember that, but... Where were you when we needed you?
You bunch of cheapskates. You were just looking for that buffet.
There you go. Yes, wrestlers always look for buffets.
So with that, we're going to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. He, of course, is the legend Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend some of it here with us. And we'll talk to you again next week.